Thanks. I enjoyed the show. It's always a good topic. Gene raised it, and we went with it. So that's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in tomorrow. It's Mark Levine signing off.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All righty, welcome aboard. I think we'll have a lot of fun tonight, and it may get a little bit weird here toward the end of the first hour. A little Obama-Democrat thingy going on this side of the river, and I can't spend the entire meeting with them, but I did promise food, so I've got a great hot dip ready to go. And I'll take 10 minutes or so and run it down, drop it off, say hi, howdy, thank you, wonderful, God bless, whatever, and turn around and come back. So that's probably what's going to happen toward the end of this hour, and then we'll pick it up and, you know, go like gangbusters afterward. And I'll put on some classical music or something. Just tell everybody in the chat room, email around, whatever you guys do. Let them know that I haven't disappeared. I'm really here. But I did make the food commitment. And, well, I'm a recovering Southern Baptist. When you promise to bring food, by God, you bring food. So that's just all there is to it. So what a wonderful discussion with Mark Levine there in the last hour. And, I hope if you missed it, I hope I made myself fairly clear. Because if you excuse people for their seemingly innocent practice of religion, then you have to excuse them for all the other seemingly innocent things that they do, born of ignorance as well. Right? You know, the immediate analogy that I drew was the ignorance of people who won't turn off their damn lights or turn the computer off at the end of the day. I can't turn the computer off at the end of the day because if I do that, we don't have a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week stream. But all the others get turned off, and all the lights get turned off. I run around here yelling at the kids and turning lights off. Because I guess I'm just obsessive-compulsive about it. You know, it's equally fun because it also keeps our power bill from getting jacked up. But look, is there anybody in this audience who thinks that the people who voted for George Bush in 2004 do not have the blood of thousands and thousands of Iraqi civilians on their hands? Well, they're just workaday Republicans, Bob. They didn't know they were voting for a war. Horse feathers. Ignorantia juris non excusat, Mark Levine, who's already gone. He knows what that Latin phrase, ignorance of the law, is not an excuse. Ignorance of the facts is not an excuse. But I'm getting ahead of myself, because after all, well, you know what today is. It's not just the middle of the week, right? Nope, it's definitely Wednesday, but not just the middle of the week. No, it's prayer meeting Wednesday, and I think we got a dandy on our hands.
In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen. say, praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD. Just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah. Solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
Hallelujah, brethren and sistren, pick up your serpent, come on down the blood-red carpet, and lay your hands upon the subwoofers at the altar and feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through you. I am Bishop Bob, and I welcome you to this Wednesday night prayer meeting edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid. To get back to where I was going in the first place, and I'm going to go to the phones. We got somebody on the line right away. Question time. Bob, what are you taking to the... It's a dip. It's a hot dip. Artichoke hearts, spinach, breadcrumbs, an egg, a little bit of sour cream, some mayo to serve as a binder, Parmesan, grated Parmesan whipped into all of that, Parmesan and breadcrumbs on the top, and you bake it, and then you broil the top, and you serve it hot with, like, Triscuits and stuff, and it's wonderful. So that's what that is. Now, to go back to what I was saying, actions have consequences, don't they? I mean, where do you draw the dividing line? It's not fair to talk to Mark because Mark's not in the room, but just to continue the discussion, at least one-sided, that I was having with him, where do you draw the line? Where is the end of the innocence? Is that a song segue? Where's the end of the innocence of the simple believer? Is it in their activism? Because it's easy to be an activist now within that circle. All you got to do is get on the email list of the American Family Association, and you can help keep them queers from getting married in California. Just send your money and send your emails and write your congressman. Send them an email right now, won't you, brother? Won't you, sister? But if all you do is tune in Kenneth Copeland every Sunday morning, and you let your mind get filled with that poison, and you actually buy into it, aren't you enabling that? Not you, you know. But isn't one enabling that? Isn't Flush Flimball a multimillionaire because 20 million passive Americans, well, you know, 5 million a day, have enabled him to be that? How can one escape responsibility for that? I don't know. So to that extent, you know, I guess you'd say I'm an atheist because I don't believe, first of all, I don't believe that good gods rape little girls. Just don't. And I don't believe that gods turn into swans either, or bulls, or possums. Just militate, you know. And unless Jesus was a shark, he wasn't born of a virgin, because that's the only, some lower species, but no humans. This don't work that way. But the whole reason for all of that, and the Holy Trinity, and the holy smoke, and the bells and the whistles and the incense stenchers, the whole reason for all of that, well, the incense stenchers is because everybody stank back then, but you know, apart from that, the whole reason for all of that is to set up a bunch of diversionary theater to keep people from actually, because we don't want you living like Christ, we want you killing. We want you ready to die. And that's what early Christianity turned into. Be not afraid to be a martyr as our Christ was a martyr. Hallelujah, praise Jesus, amen. There you go. Because if you read a rational translation of the stuff, I mean, there's some crazy stuff in there. There's some stuff that almost makes you weep with the efforts of the early children of Israel to organize themselves into a viable tribe that wouldn't be killed. And there's some rationalization in there. You know, the tribes and the sons of Israel descended on Egypt because Egypt had food and they didn't. And the next thing you know, you're being told, well, and then Pharaoh turned them into slaves. And yet there is no evidence in ancient Egyptology whatsoever for the slavery of, no, it don't exist. There's no evidence in the vast wastes of the Sinai for, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people marching across it. It doesn't exist. But it's all justification. And along the way, you see the little rules being made, you know, and if he killeth a bullock on a day that does not end in Y, thou shalt stone him outside the city gates. You know, that kind of crap. Some of it's based on how to continue to survive. But the other is justification for why things turn out the way they are. You know, bless their hearts, the early children of Israel can't win anything without either double-dealing, skullduggery, or treachery. You go read the book of, I guess it's considered apocryphal, the book of Judith, and here's a beautiful woman who sneaketh into the camp of the Persian general, or Assyrian general, and loppeth off his pumpkin head from his little old neck. Yay you! Can't win by force of arms, so we'll win by lopping off the general's head. Treachery. Skullduggery. And Marty writes in and says, don't forget the beer. In the words of Jim Hightower, you got to lubricate the movement. Hear, hear. But it's sad. It's pitiable. It's pathos. Watching all these rules get concocted for people who aren't very good at living together in a time when they were fascinated and utterly baffled by wheelbarrows. And didn't know why it rained or why plants came up. They just knew if you plant them now, they come up later. And then a miracle happeneth. But then you do move down a couple of thousand years ago, and here comes this guy, and he's walking around the desert, and he's saying, hey, quit being so crappy to each other. Life will get a lot easier if you love each other. So they killed him for it. Man. So it's the life I'm interested in, not the death cult. But that's where we begin. Well, I tell you what, I hate to keep anyone waiting on the phone, so my little story will wait. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up, man?
Got to get in on this one. All too often, a lot of people use religion to get their political and economic agendas. Because religion is such a, you know, it's a very personal thing.
It absolutely is. I mean, look, here's a classic case in point, Kevin. Consider the Iranian Revolution of the 1970s. Now, they had themselves, the Iranian people, the Persian people, whatever you want to call them, had themselves the beginnings of a nice little democracy going in the late 40s, post-World War II, and the beginning of the 50s. And they elected a man named Mossadegh, Mohammad Mossadegh, prime minister. You know, fair elections, you know, popular leader, typical Western governmental structure, you know, prime minister of a parliamentary body. But he had this crazy notion that the oil that was under Iran belong to Iran and not to the British Petroleum Company.
Oh, how dare he?
Yeah. And so, you know, Winston Churchill started militating right away to get him taken out. And, I mean, he irritated the life out of Harry Truman, who'd been more than good to him, mm-hmm. and said, you know, please? Yeah. We must get our oil back. For you know how it goes. And Harry Truman said, you know, piss off. The people want this guy. You're going to have to deal with him. So Winston Churchill just waited out Harry Truman till Eisenhower came in. Of course, he and Eisenhower are old drinking buddies. And he said, can't you take this out? And, yeah, I guess we can. And so Norman Schwarzkopf's granddaddy and Theodore Roosevelt's grandson and a bunch of those other Yaley skullduggerists put together a coup that got rid of Mossadegh, put him under house arrest for the rest of his life, brought in the Shah of Iran, who, let's see, what's the famous phrase? Tortured his own people, brutal dictator, until the late 70s when he began to weaken, and the people who wanted change away from that hateful tyranny had one vehicle, and that was religion, and it was a radical fundamentalist religion, and they used it to overturn, and you get the, and then you get the hostage crisis and the storming of the embassy, and the hate that has existed between these two countries for low a generation now.
Yeah, but Persia or Iran, as whichever people choose, I prefer to say Persia, has been the enemy of the West since the Greeks.
Well, yeah. Or you could say that in the early days of the in the days of the Greeks were the enemies of the Persians.
Yeah.
Because if you look, the Persians had created a stable world. The Greeks were constantly contentious among themselves, and I'm not talking about just the mainland Greeks or the Peloponnesians or the Corinthians or the Athenians or the Macedonians or the the Ionian Greeks, all the island coastal Levantine Greeks, constantly squabbling and bickering amongst themselves. And took it upon them, and, you know, granted, Persia did try to expand into Europe, you know, with the demand, the Persian emperor's demand, the Persian great king's demand for water and earth. And let's see, that part of it is true. The Spartans threw the Persian ambassador down a well. Nice people. You know, I mean, if you can't respect somebody's ambassador, I mean, come on. Because, it's founded on a certain amount of civility. You know, other Greek city-states gave their tribute of water and earth and fell and, titularly fell under the sway of the great king. But in that story, the actual, the actual terrorist in that bunch is the ancient Greeks.
Oh, yeah, especially.
Because they were the small reactionary group going against the large established government. Which is, and that's the funny thing. If you're drawing an analogy, ancient Persia and the United States and the West are in the same position, whereas the radical Islamic fundamentalists and the Greeks occupy the same position. I know that would probably make some people crazy and some people mad at me, but it's true.
Well, it is true. It's 100% true, because the fact of the matter is, and, you know, even though the movie wasn't all, to me, all that accurate, it was a fairly decent movie, 300.
Yeah, but I mean, Xerxes was not a big post-punk parsing piercing devotee drag queen.
Yeah, well, that's exactly.
And there were no Balrogs.
Yeah, it was quite racist in the sense that they kind of looked down on a multi-ethnic, multinational state.
Sure.
And that's where I took offense to the film.
Well, it seemed there was a clear agenda in 300.
Oh yeah, it was a right wing movie. It definitely was, and this is during the high point of when Madman McCain said "Bob, Bob, Bob, Bomb Iran."
You're absolutely right, Kevin.
You know, I wonder if Rupert Murdoch had his hand in financing that.
Yeah, kind of. It's tempting to wonder. And look, the fact that. The sad thing about the movie 300 was that it was unnecessary. The story of what happened at Thermopylae, you know, I'm biased. I root for the Greeks every time. The story is heroism at its very finest. You know, that plaque that stood there in the ground for all those thousands of years. Go tell the Spartans, stranger passing by, that here, obedient to their laws, we lie. Whew, just saying it makes little chills run up and down my spine. And, you know, it didn't need the Balrogs. But I guess you need the Balrogs if you want to get the prepubescent 12-year-olds into the theater.
Yeah. And, you know, this is what frightens me about America Now, because America Now is a lot like Sparta then.
Sure.
Where you have a whole economy driven for the purpose of fighting. Hence, 3,000 years later, what is left of Sparta? What do we know of Sparta other than that 300 and they know how to fight well, and opposed to what is left of Athens? We know a lot about Athens, but we know nothing historically of Sparta, except for that one little event.
Well, I mean, we know what kind of authoritarian proto-fascist society that they had.
Yeah, but that's all that's left of them.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, go to Athens, they're the Athens today. Where's Sparta?
Well, it's there, but not much, because there wasn't much there in the first place. They didn't engage in a lot of building. They didn't engage in public works. They trained for one thing, to go slaughter other Greeks.
Yeah, and that's the problem. That's the end road of the road we're taking now.
Yeah, and look, if you want to trace a historical line, but perhaps some people would take issue with me, you know, our Senate is named after the Roman Senate, the Senatus, and the Senatus is based on a Latin root word that means old, senex, and it was supposed to be a bunch of old men. Well, the governing body in ancient Sparta was called the Gerousia, from which root we also get the word geriatric. Again, they were ruled by a bunch of old, cranky old men.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a line that extends. The reason that we remember Athens is because of their, at least in my opinion, that because of their bold determination to try something different. Democracy didn't have to happen in Athens, and you can argue that while we laud it, democracy was a failure. It lasted, what, 250 years tops? It ended when they started a stupid war with the Spartans.
Mm-hmm.
And got their rear ends handed to them and lost their democracy at the end of the 30 years Peloponnesian War.
Yep.
And they started it on the same kind of pretextual garbage that we started our little adventure in the Middle East. They started it started with an argument about the little island, and eventually it winds up being an expedition against Syracuse, and oh God, well, anybody that wants to know can go read Thucydides.
Mm-hmm.
But it took them down. They were hit. You know, the funeral oration of Pericles is deemed among the most beautiful of public speaking. But if you read it, it's beautiful. But you got to wonder how they got to where they were.
Well, that's the end. Again, it's the end game. You know,
I mean, you do realize who murdered Socrates.
I believe the Spartans.
No. It wasn't some tyrant king, some despot, some dictator. It was the Athenian democracy.
To do what was politically expedient.
Well, no, they were troubled because Socrates was asking tough questions.
Mm-hmm.
Socrates had a following of young people who thought he was pretty smart because he was able to think circles around all the sophists.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't go in for blaming the gods. And he was politically dangerous to the, because even democracies have power bases and power elites. And he was dangerous to them, and they took him out on a trumped-up charge of corrupting the youth.
Yeah.
That was a democracy. And, you know, Plato, till the day he died, hated democracy as a result of that. Because a king could have intervened and said, you know, you people are nuts. I'm not killing this guy. But the democracy said, nope, going to do it.
Yeah. You know, it's strange. You know, I'm thinking of, you know, a woman from your area, probably one of the most long-lasting caricatures of this war is Lizzie England.
Oh, Lindy England, sure.
Yeah. To me, she exemplifies the Spartan. We have someone who wasn't that highly educated, probably... whose IQ, you know, I'm not going to judge her because I don't know her. And I
oh, she's dumber than a big bag of homemade stupid. Oh, I mean, I'll judge her.
I think that can be argued. If someone is well disciplined and have a certain kind of structure, maybe she can have a certain kind of intelligence. But I think she was brought up in a highly dysfunctional environment.
Well, she was brought up in an authoritarian structure, too. And there was no way out for her. We could go for days on this, Kevin. Lindy England, you can trace Lindy England's arc of her existence through what happens to so many West Virginians. There's nothing here. Because for 100 bleeding years, we've relied on a monoculture colonial economy that says coal is all there is.
Mm-hmm.
And in large part, with due apologies to the great artists that I know who continue to live and reside in this state, most great West Virginians, in order to achieve greatness, have to get out of West Virginia.
Yeah.
Maybe that says something about me.
Yeah.
he said, trying to tuck his ego back in his back pocket. But, you know, Pearl Buck, born here, writes about China. The Chuck Yeager. Flew right out of the holler. The Homer Hickam, the Rocket Boys guy. Yeah, he did his early experimentation as a kid building these little rockets out of spare parts from the coal company machine shop and shot them off on the mountains of Mingo County. But you know they haven't launched any spaceships from Williamson lately.
Nash, the Princeton, you know, the guy who had a beautiful
yeah.
mind.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, of course, you can argue that maybe all the mercury that he his mother ingested and that was passed on to him fetally, that maybe that was part and parcel of why his brain's sideways.
But it's just, to me, Lindy England represents your typical Spartan, obedient, questions nothing, doesn't think.
Don't forget mean.
Mean streak, because in that kind of environment, you do become mean.
Well, but it's not just that. You know, she worked in, there's not too far from where she lived, or lives, I don't know. There is a Maryland State Correctional Facility.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that crowd that was working at Abu Ghraib came out of corrections. And so that's why I argued when Abu Ghraib blew up. You know, why are you people surprised? This kind of crap goes on in our prisons every day.
Every day, yeah.
They're not prisons, they're torture facilities.
It's an industry. And this is what happens when you don't create opportunity. You know, as you know, I'm working on a manuscript, and I'm going into the section of the educational, industrial, military complex, where we're educated now not to think, not to reason, not to rationalize, but to obey.
Yeah, thank you, citizen. Move along.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, well, this stuff all happens for a reason. And the question is, you know, are we even willing to take a run at changing it? Because change is difficult.
Yeah. I think one of the things we have to get back to doing, and it means a lot, and I'm saying this because I'm still a union member, I think, is empower our teachers more.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Obama button that I'm wearing around on my little jacket when I go out is an American Federation of Teachers Obama button.
Yeah. And
see, I support the AFT, not so much the West Virginia Education Association. They're like a social club. The AFT is a real union.
Yeah. Because there's been such disrespect done to our public school teachers in the past 30 years. It's beyond belief. Where now, teachers are more likely to get thrown out of the school than a student.
Yeah, yeah. And bear in mind that, of course, one of the you know, part and parcel of all these moves by, say, you know, the Republican Party, Kevin, all these moves toward vouchers and charter schools and magnet schools and gym crack schools and privatized education. It's not just about bleeding the public coffers and killing public education. It is also about breaking
the union. And it's because it's one of the few unions that has some kind of teeth left.
Yeah, if for no other reason than membership alone.
Yeah. And even that's been weakened greatly. And the thing is, it always goes back to, those liberal elites in the Northeast.
You know, I actually got called an elitist. I got sucked into one of those stupid little message board discussions on a YouTube video.
Well, you know, what's an elitist now? I was called an elitist when I was out in the Midwest for having a passport. So, go figure.
Yeah, well, you know, I said elitist? Do you mean I think I'm smarter than you? No, I don't think I'm smarter than you. I know I'm smarter than you.
I can't even argue with them. I just go, yes, I don't have the physical strength anymore, Bob. I really don't. I'm trying to filter out a lot of what, as Mike Malloy would say, that biatch up in Alaska.
Yeah.
She represents everything that's wrong with this country, literally.
And nothing that's right.
And nothing that's right.
And I understand the need to do that because it is vile and it is hateful out there.
Yeah.
You're lucky that you're in New York, Kevin.
No, we get it because Fox is based in New York.
Yeah, you get it, but you're not surrounded with it.
But exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. And
I mean, I got to tell you, it was kind of interesting when I went to the Obama meeting here on this side of the river last week. I was pleased to see that there was an organization. I walked in. Most of the folks there were African American.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked in, you know, whitest man in America, you know. the only thing that separates me from Edgar Winter is the absence of pink eyes on my part.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the room turned to, you know, and it was like, huh?
Kind of like that scene in Animal House when they go to the black club.
Yeah. Huh? Otis, my man!
And then, yeah.
But I was tickled to be there, and I'm so sad that it's that way. I ran into a reporter today who was out walking around with his camera, and he said something to me. I said, "Are you kidding? Obama's probably not going to win this state, and he probably won't win this county." He said, "There's no Republican registrations in this county."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "I know." He said, "How could Obama possibly lose this county?" I said, "Because this county is awash in racism and prejudice and bigotry."
Yeah.
And you know, he said, "I just can't believe it." I said, "Then don't believe. Use your mind. Look at the tallies on election day."
Yeah.
So there you have it.
Yeah. And it's going to be like that for a long, long time because people are frightened. And as long as they keep on drilling up the fear, and, you know, I'm not going to blame white people. You know, black people do their own share in this nonsense, okay? I think it's just a national pastime at this point. You know.
Illness, perhaps?
Illness, pastime, whatever you want to call it, because I think it's all embedded, going back when we talk about religion, Baptist Church.
Sure, and what Ken...
the state religion of the United States.
Well, and what Ken called in a couple of nights ago to tell us about the origins of the Assemblies of God to which Sarah Palin belongs. You know, the scales fell from my eyes when I realized, when Ken led me through it, that the Assemblies of God are a reverse split-off from the Pentecostal Holiness Movement, which was formed by African Americans,
mm-hmm.
and that there was a counter-racism movement that caused the Assemblies of God to split off and form their own group,
mm-hmm.
because they didn't want to be led by a man of color.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's an ongoing ping-pong match.
Sure it is, yeah. and it goes back to the question, Kevin, that I was asking of Levine. How do you draw that line?
I draw the line, and, you know, okay, I was raised Anglican, Church of England. You know, I have reasons for why I am, partially because I'm raised that family tradition coming from the West Indies. That was the state church. But also my political beliefs, you know.
Sure.
In the past 50 years, I think the Episcopal Church, as Americans will say, has taken on some of the most liberal.
Yeah, that's why I believe. That's why even, you know, even despite the hokum, I have some respect for the Episcopal Church. I have a great deal of respect for the Episcopal Church.
Because, you know, Bishop Desmond Tutu, their movement, their stance against apartheid South Africa, and the fact, yes, even the whole gay rights thing has broken the church in two. At least it's being argued, and there are most of the mainstream have accepted their rights as human beings. You'll find a few conservative sects in Northern Virginia who don't.
Well, and they're the ones, like Levine was talking about, they're the ones who have affiliated themselves with that African bishop.
Yeah. But I like to focus more on Sermon on the Mount. Other people want to focus on Revelations and all that.
Well, and they want to focus on the gory death. It's like that fundamentalist freak who was screaming his fool head off a week ago at Bridge Day.
Yeah.
You know, he tries to hand me this hand-lettered tract. I didn't take one of them, but one of my kids did and showed me. The guy had hand-bloodied the tract. He'd taken a red magic marker and made it extra bloody.
Yeah.
It's like, a death cult.
It is. It really is. And, you know, living in the South and living in the Midwest for time being, I was exposed to it to a point where it just kind of, you know... And then you get accused of not being open-minded. I'm like, I'm not open-minded to death. I'm not open-minded to this.
I'm not open-minded to ignorance.
That too.
You know, I don't, this is going to sound crazy, I don't tolerate intolerance.
Yeah. Exactly.
I have no room in my life for a fascist or an authoritarian.
Exactly, and that's what it's all based on. You know, simple thing, Halloween is coming up, you know. We kind of do the Halloween thing where we give candies to the kids and have a party. Oh, it's the devil's party.
Oh, wait, that's another thing. I don't know if you follow baseball or not, but I kind of do when I can.
Yeah.
You know, the World Series is starting. It's the Phillies and Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Well, Tampa Bay was constituted as the Tampa Bay Devil Rays.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Well, they had to change their name. They're just the Tampa Bay Rays now. You know, I don't know. Maybe across the state, you know, in honor of Bob and Ray, you know, maybe in a few years we can have the Jacksonville Bobs, and then they can play an interleague play, and it'll be the Bob and Rays. Sorry, that's really obscure. But yeah, they changed their name to the Tampa Bay Rays, and I don't have any empirical data to suggest this is true. It is pure speculation on my part. But that's Tampa Bay, and that is the heart of some of the weirdest, hardcorest fundamentalism in the United States.
Well, you know,
and you can almost see the marketing meeting. Well, I think our stadium's empty because they don't like the word devil.
Oh yeah.
Tell me I'm wrong.
I wouldn't blame you. I lived in that region, so. I lived on the I-4 corridor.
Okay, so you know better than I do. You know, our pal Juanita can call in and tell me. I doubt if she'll tell me I'm crazy.
A lot of weirdnesses out there.
I mean, these are people.
Theme park.
They got a Jesus theme park. Bingo.
I used to pass by it on the way to work almost every morning.
Oh, you can imagine the marketing meeting. The guy from the Tampa Bay baseball team goes to the theme park and says, "We'd like you to give away some free tickets to the ball game. Be good for you." Well, I don't think we can give those away because that's worshiping the devil.
None of these
people, Kevin, even know the origin of the devil. They don't realize that the manifestation of him, the visual, the graphic, if you will, of him with the, you know, the cloven hooves and the tail and the that's all Dionysian stuff. It's about the difference between Apollonian versus Dionysian that for all his other faults, Nietzsche identified.
You know, it's a lot of weirdness.
Mucho weirdness. Hey, Kevin, good to hear from you, brother.
Okay, bro.
You take care now.
Okay.
Bye. And I want to get a couple of calls in before I do have to bug out. Ah, you left. Now, see, I moved on from Kevin because you were there, but then you left. Doggone it. Patience, people. Patience. You'll wait 3 hours on the... But me? No. Now I'm just being petulant. Hey, let me remind you of something. This is our third anniversary week. We're not doing anything special. It's just another work day on Friday. Friday will be our third anniversary here. Got a very generous donation in, a contribution in the other night. Said, thanks for the great years of radio, and here's hoping to more. pushed us a little bit closer to at least getting halfway to our fundraising goal for the month of October. Here it is, the 22nd day, and we're getting close to $1,000 for the month. It's tough, I tell you. It's tough. But thank you. Thank you very, very kindly. Got another couple of contributions in today. We will probably cross the $1,000 line in the next day or so. And thank you to all of you who are making that happen. Thank you very much. Let's do this first. This is a piece of audio I found today over at Crooks and Liars, and you know. And it's one of those things. The audio will stand on its own, but, Lord, when you couple it with the video. This is a report from filed by an Al Jazeera correspondent. Al Jazeera? Really? Yes, really, Al Jazeera. They actually do journalism as opposed to most of what goes on in America in the for-profit media. Well, this is a little report that was posted over at Crooks and Liars and filed by an Al Jazeera correspondent going to see one of these Sarah Palin claverns in Ohio. Check it out.
A small town in the swing state of Ohio is where Sarah Palin addresses some of her core supporters.
He don't even sound like an Al Jazeera. See how they are? They're infiltrating us. They even sound like us now.
This area is mostly white and working class. And here's what some have to say about presidential candidate Barack Obama.
I'm afraid if he wins, the black will take over. It's not a question.
I'm afraid if he wins, the black will take over? Huh? He's not a Christian!
This is a Christian nation. What is our country going to end up black?
Did she say, what is our country going to end up black? See, this is what I was talking with Levine about. This is why there's no such thing as an innocent practitioner of religion. Because in one way or another, they all enable someone else, and they enable, in the fundamentalist sects, mostly fear and bigotry and hate.
You've got a Negro running for president. He need a first stringer. He's definitely a second stringer.
He seems like a sheep or a wolf in sheep's clothing, to be honest with you. And I believe Palin, she's filled with the Holy Spirit, and I believe she's going to bring honesty and integrity to the White House.
Now, that's a young white man holding a little baby who, thanks to 8 years of George W. Bush, has a debt of something around the $75,000 mark hanging around its little baby neck. And he's going to raise that little baby in hate, bigotry, and superstition, feeling like the world is out to get him and take away his Bible and bring in the gay. And it is all enabled by religion. Because long before any of this stuff, the William Ayer stuff or any of that garbage, hit the mainstream, baby, it was pouring out of the pulpits all over this country in fundamentalist churches. That's what I was talking about the business with Iran. They wanted to get away from their tyrannical despot, and the vehicle that provided them an opportunity was fundamentalist Shia Islam, which they figured was better than, you know, seeing their relatives taken off and having their testicles electrocuted and otherwise tortured by the torture goons of the Shah, what was it called, the Savak, that we trained, yeah, with our tax dollars. Oh, it's kind of a problem. And then they get something that's far worse, arguably, than they thought they were getting rid of. And we want to bomb them for it. Ouch.
He's related to a known terrorist, for one.
He's related to William Ayers now. See, what did we say? Somebody made the observation on this program the other night that the reason you don't see a lot of pictures of William Ayers is because they're trying to create the mental image among the terrified, ignorant white people that William Ayers is this guy with this dashiki on and this big old Angela Davis afro, and there you go. He's related to him. But that ain't all.
Is friends with a terrorist of this country.
He must support terrorists. You know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it must be a duck. And that, to me, is Obama.
Just the whole...
Obama's a duck. He's a duck terrorist. See? See how it goes?
In the Muslim thing and everything, I mean, everybody's still kind of... A lot of people have forgotten about 9/11, but I don't know. It's just kind of a little unnerving.
Obama and his wife, I'm concerned that they could be anti-white, that he might hide that.
How can you be anti-white? I'm just asking. And I'm not asking rhetorically. You feel free to tell me. How can you be anti-white? What does anti-white mean? All the white people going to get rounded up and sent to those camps that George W. Bush had built? Oy. I'm afraid it's going to be anti-white. Next thing we know, they'll take away our Mitch Miller albums and our Lawrence Welk records, and we'll all have to walk with our pants hanging halfway to our knees.
I don't like the fact that he thinks us white people are trash. Because we're...
Lady! You're trash! It's not because you're white. It's because you're trash. It's because you're ignorant. It's because you're dumber than a big old bag of homemade stupid. Because you walk around saying things like... Well, like you say.
Not.
Hey!
Taylor and his friends lined the road leading to the rally to show their support for Barack Obama.
Hey, Gorman's right.
Their body, their
baby
choice.
Baby killer. Call it what you want. It's baby killer.
Taylor is from St. Clairsville and is shocked by the names he's been called by his own neighbors.
I've been called the N-word. I've become a Muslim. I've been called a un-American. I'm worried with these people. The tension's getting thicker and thicker. With people like that, it's starting to scare me.
Worried about what?
Be specific. I'm afraid some of these people might try to hurt Obama.
Grill, baby, grill.
The divisive
grill,
nature
baby,
of this
grill.
Campaign has brought out into the open what's usually discussed behind closed doors in America.
And that there, Al Jazeera, you can't see it here, but I can. I got to tell you, that Al Jazeera correspondent, that Al Jazeera liberal mediast, he's not even wearing a turban. They walk among us. Makes my little pumpkin head hurt. A geographical note for you. In case you're wondering, St. Clairsville, Ohio? Shh. That's practically West Virginia. It's just across the river from Wheeling. Yeah, sorry. It is. So that's the uphill road we climb. Truly it is. Okay, now my little voting story. And it is a little voting story. I sent this off to Brad Friedman just to see if he could give me an answer, but I haven't heard back from him yet, so maybe he just thought I was nuts. I had some running around to do this morning, and so two things were going down. They were giving out free flu shots, and there was some early voting going on over in the county seat. So I thought I'd do both. Be smart and responsible and get my flu shot. Well, that didn't work out so well. I walked in, and apparently all the flu shots were gone. All they had left were kiddie doses. And, you know, at 6'2" and 230 pounds, it'd take about, I'd have to have like a kiddie six-pack of flu vaccine. It's a kiddie case. So, And so I walk across, it's maybe 50 feet to the courthouse, and I walk in for the early voting. I figured, you know, I'll do this. I'm curious. I had my cell phone with me, and it's got video on it. And I thought, you know, I'll go vote on the electronic machine, and I'll video it in case it flips me. And then we'll have affirmative, you know, we'll have evidence. And I walked in the door, and please understand. You know, I got a pair of khakis on. I got a little, you know, just an Oxford shirt, Oxford cloth shirt, typical. Got my denim jacket on, a little brisk. It was 27 degrees this morning. Brisked my rear end. It was cold. And a little fedora on to keep my little pumpkin head warm. And I still had it on when I walked into the building and walked into the room where the early voting was going on. And there was a crowd in there. I mean, lots of crowds around here. Lots of early voting happening. And so I walk through the door, and this lady looks at me with this stricken look on her face and says, "Is it on?" And I got to admit, I thought it was kind of cute because you don't hear a lot of people who still, and I'd forgotten to take my hat off. And, you know, Mama always said you take your hat off when you go into a building, a man does. So I reached up and I took my hat off. And she said, is it on? And she was looking at me with it wasn't about my hat. When we got the cell phone so that we would be able to do like remote tethering for internet service, so we'd never have to rely on somebody else's internet ever again, and we could broadcast wherever we went. And it came in a package deal with the phone and one of those stupid little Borgian YouTube or the Bluetooth. Gee. I need a vacation. Bluetooth, hands-free wireless hickeys that hangs in your ear and makes you look like something from Star Trek, you know, the Borg. My Borg name is Loquacious, by the way. Is it on? And she pointed at it again, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be stupid or dense or, and I took it out, and I said, I don't know. And then she said, well, step out of the room and turn it off. It can ruin the machines. And I said, look, y'all are busy today. I'll vote. And she, you can vote. And I'll do it another day. And I walked out, and then it dawned on me. And it troubled me all the way home, and it troubles me still. Now, I know enough about the technology to know that it's a little teeny tiny radio transmitter that transmits from the phone to the Bluetooth device when it's paired and it's got the right frequency and everything. So that when you're driving down the road, you don't have to look, you can look like a really insane person talking to thin air instead of holding the phone up against your head and maybe getting in a wreck. It's just a little tiny radio transmitter. The specs on this thing say that it works in a range of like 33 feet. But I, being a curious person, tested it out, and it doesn't work that, no. More like a range of 5 feet. I get static between my ear and my belt, okay? I mean, it just is what it is. But then all the little lights and bells and whistles went off. The woman told me that Bluetooth receiver could foul the voting machines. A Bluetooth receiver. What does that say for the integrity and the security of electronic voting machines? Can some jackanapes out there with a Bluetooth receiver in his pocket go in and screw up an entire day's voting? I wasn't trying to. I had no knowledge. There was no sign around there that said, please turn off Bluetooth head. No! And there wasn't anything about turning off your cell phone either. But she looked at me like she had seen the devil. And hence my letter off to Brad Friedman, and I hope he'll find out something about this and get back to me. Because it was, huh? And it makes me understand that all the, you know, no matter what kind of machine you're voting on, if you're voting on a machine, you're screwed. Especially absent a paper trail. So that's my little machine voting thing. And when I get back here in a few minutes, I invite your thoughts on the matter. Let's go to the phones for right now, though. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita. I took your name. Well, not in vain, but I mentioned your name a minute ago.
I heard that.
Oh, okay.
That's okay.
So is that crazy? Can you imagine the Tampa Bay Devil Rays having to take Devil out because of where they are?
I can. I really can because, like, I went to school where we had the Blue Devils, and it took about 20 years ago. I think there still are the Blue Devils, but I didn't even realize that about the Devil Rays because that's the name of a fish. Isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Manta rays, sting rays, devil rays.
But you're right. It was the Devil Rays, and now it is just the Rays. So. No, I agree with you, and I know the mindset, and I know people like those people that you play on, sad to say, but I just wanted to tell you, I heard you talking the other day about Hugo Chavez, isn't that his name?
Yeah, Hugo Chavez, yeah.
Chavez, yeah. You were talking about how he could be humorous. I think the best thing that I ever heard him say was... At the UN, he followed Bush after Bush
Yeah, I can still smell the sulfur.
Yeah. That was the truth.
Yeah.
That was the truth. The man is a liar.
He is George W. Bush is a servant of Satan. That's to the extent that there's a real Satan, you know, a malevolent force, a malevolent spirit that strives and contends with any movement for good. George Bush serves the malevolent side. Absolutely,
well,
no doubt about
Bobby,
it.
Bobby, you got to admit there's evil in this world, whether it's the devil or what, but there is evil for sure and for certain. But I love that what he said. So y'all said that I thought, well, maybe I better not say anything about it, but I did. I thought that was great because he, like you said, he was telling the truth.
Sure he was.
In a very simple way. there's a lot of talk out, you know, about that neither one of the people running is any good, you know.
I hate that.
But you know what? If I'm going to be screwed, I'd rather be screwed, and I don't mean...
No, I know what you mean.
By Obama, then if I'm going to have my choice, if I'm going to be screwed, I'm going to change, and I'm going to real change in screwedness. Oh,
yeah, let's try something different.
Right. And, you know, I'm so tired of this Republican stuff. It just wears you down. And you hear the people call in, I've never have been able to sleep at night before. Now I'm having trouble sleeping just thinking about Obama being the president. And you know.
Yeah, they were sleeping just fine while little babies were being slaughtered in Iraq. Sure, yeah.
And then we get built up and then we get kicked down. It's just happened over and over again. And not just by the Republicans, but like our beloved Blue Dog Democrats. You know that. And we've been through the mill, so if neither one of them are in, I'm going to change over.
Well, but you know, Juanita, I mean, all this talk about socialism, you know, so I've run into it.
Socialism.
But
me.
Yeah, I know, but... But all this talk about, you know, he's going to change America. You know, he's going. I'm afraid he won't support white values. Huh?
Oh my goodness.
You know,
we better learn some other people. We as the white race learn other people's values that they've got. Some of them got more values than we have.
Well, and at the end of that, you know what? So white people are the only ones who try to raise their children right. Is that what I've got here? I don't know. It's like I said, they'll take away our he'll take away our Perry Como records. What?
Oh, well, some white people wouldn't say that he was white because he was Italian.
I've forgotten. Yeah, those people are out there. Hey, Juanita,
forget.
I hate to cut you short, but I've got to get out of here and
take your dip.
I got to take my dip down, and then I'll be back in about probably 15 minutes, okay? But I'm going to get some music going.
Care.
Thank you, Juanita.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. I'm sorry it has to work out this way. I hate leaving you guys, but no way I was going to just bug out on the show for a bunch of time. But, I don't know. Maybe Agnes will want to come in and talk to you, and she's welcome to do that for a little bit if that's what she's up for. But for the moment, I'm going to fade up a little bit of sort of nondescript jazz. There we go. And I'll let this go till I get back. This should certainly cover all the time that I need to be gone. I apologize for the absence, but like I said, I made a promise. So I'll hurry right back. You are listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn, and I'm Bob. Now, don't go away. It's cool jazz.
Thank you.
streamer. Okay. Everybody. Okay. There we go. So somebody let me know in the next, minute, 20 seconds. So make sure the stream's back because the stream had burped here on this end, and I apologize. So there you go. It was my bad. Yeah, I guess I've been talking all along and nobody knew it, but, you know, at least we were recording it here, so it'll be great on the archive. That was John Scofield you were listening to from the 1997 album A Go-Go. Or weren't, because the stream burped. I don't know. So, my apologies. So we're halfway through the program this evening. You can ring the phones up again if you want to. 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4, H-E-A-D-O-N, or locally 304-658-3333 if you want to help us save a buck or whatever. And we will go straightway to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
I just walked in the door, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, neither do I, because I just was sitting. I took a little break to deliver some food and to a meeting that I had promised to deliver food to. I got back, and I babbled away for about 10 minutes and didn't realize the stream had burped.
So life happens that way.
So I may as well have been talking to the ether. So, you know, we're even, and we can start with a clean slate, Luke. What's up?
Okay. I was sitting today doing a little writing, just looking at some stories. Now, answer me this. It just struck me. Okay, we have last weekend we have this thing with the Republican Bachman making her comments up in Minnesota. And then we have this representative apparently over in North Carolina who said liberals hate all real Americans.
Right.
And we have Palin describing her idea of what the vice presidency is. And I tell you what, I learned that in fifth grade. The one I liked the other night, last night, was somebody said, all you have to do is watch the John Adams miniseries on HBO and you understand what the job is.
Yeah, sit around and wait for the president to die. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it, isn't it?
That's it. Yeah, go to funerals and prepare. And then we have now today, or yesterday today, what I like to now call the $150,000 wardrobe malfunction.
Oh, I'm loving that. I was thinking about that earlier. I got a, of course, I wasn't on the air last night, so naturally the fun stuff happens when I'm not behind the microphone. But you know what? It all dovetails together, Luke, because our buddy Dennis sent me this YouTube video of her answering the "What does the Senate do?" question.
Oh yeah,
and
well, I kept looking at all these things right in a row, and I'm sitting there going, "Do we have somebody working in the McCain campaign?" You
know? Well, exactly, because I looked at what she was wearing in that Senate "What does the Senate do?" question.
Yeah,
that red leather thing. Honest to God, I think somebody sold her the old road outfits from Loverboy's first tour. Remember Loverboy? Mike Reno, the lead singer, with the tight leather kind of red thing. And they hustled it off on Sarah Palin for $50,000.
Either that or she went to the latest Michael Jackson yard sale.
Well, there's that possibility. And you know, anybody who's ever seen Pretty Woman knows that snooty sales ladies in places like Needless Markup and Saks Fifth Avenue can be really, really catty and hateful.
But you know what I mean? It's just when I was sitting there just thinking, and I put all four of those together, and I'm just sitting there going, are they taking their stupid pills on time, apparently? Because I'm sitting there going, you know, we couldn't work and make them do something, pull four things right in a row. That absolutely just, you know, so you're just sitting there going, with the lady Bachman, oh, now it's all Chris Matthews' fault. It's like, well, I'm sorry, lady. You went on the show. No one held the gun to your head. You knew what you were going to, you know. He was saying it. You were sitting there going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they had the tape of the guy over in North Carolina who swears he doesn't remember saying it. But amazingly enough, somebody has a tape of it. So amazingly enough, there it is, what he said. And it's like, and, I mean, you're just sitting there going, you know, do y'all sit around at night with guns shooting off toes off each other? What? I'd take two of them off with one shot. Let's see. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to complain about it, but I'm sitting there going, looking at it just sort of like, you know, it's sort of like reading the onion. You're sitting there going, no, that can't be. No, you know. And it's, you know, ugh. But, I sent you the thing today, and I tell you what, I'm going to keep pounding on this for Like I say, I figure we got about 3 more weeks of the campaign to go. I don't care what that calendar says. I plan to campaign a week after the election. We ain't letting up. But my thing is, if, you know, if we turn out 90, 95% of our people and the maniacs turn out about 60% of their people, you know, we can pick up some House and Senate seats that they ain't expecting.
I think that's entirely possible. It's not impossible to think that we might pick up 62 Senate seats somewhere. You know,
because I think a lot of these people.
And then we get the massive pleasure of looking at Joe Lieberman and go, sit in the corner, son. Go sit in the corner.
Or here, Joe, we'll help you pack. You know, you can go over and sit with the Republicans. Have fun. So, you know. But you know what I mean? It's just one of those things. I think, and maybe not here, maybe not where I am and not where you are, but some of these states where, you know, where Obama's got a 15-point lead, we need all our people to show up because there's some other smaller votes that, like I say, if 90% of our people show up and their people are discouraged and 60 to 65%.
And, you know, and please, let's remember that the skullduggery is not going to quit, all right?
Oh, no.
Because...
You saw the thing yesterday where somebody got turned away early vote because he was wearing an Obama shirt.
Well, there's that. There's the vote flipping in West Virginia. Brad Friedman just broke a story of vote flipping there in Tennessee in Davidson County.
Oh, did you get the thing I sent you about Shelby? They're turning out people in record numbers, which is Memphis for people who don't know.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, say, I'm sure they're probably got lines backed up all through early voting. You know, I mean, they're not going to wait for vote. They're going to be out early voting. They're going to be getting there to do everything they can. Oh, I see this thing here. I'm sitting here. I've got hardball playing. NRCC is pulling ad buys from Representative Bachman's Minnesota race.
Oops.
She opened her mouth and the committee said, bye-bye.
And the bats flew out.
Yeah. It's amazing. I tell you, some of this stuff, I wish they'd do a little bit more coverage on where the congressional committees are spending their money. And like I say, this thing with McCain, you know, start telling us what some of the, where McCain's pulling his people. Cause you gotta wonder where he's making his last stands.
Well, isn't his last stand Ohio?
Yeah. But I mean, there's some other places.
Ohio, Virginia, Missouri.
Well, you know, that thing that we're talking about, you know, the apparently the Senate committee now, the Democrats have decided, well, we're going to pour the money into Georgia. Because I think they see they got a good shot at knocking off Saxby.
God, that would be sweet.
I would love that. But you know what I mean? It is going to be interesting to see where they pool their money. And I love this thing. Well, he was supposed to have taken the public finances. Like, no. They had a questionnaire, and he said essentially that if it had worked out, him and the Republican could have come to an agreement. Him and the Republican never talked. So he never had to take the public financing. You know what I mean? And I'm
right
up here, the Republicans crying, oh, he should have taken it. It's like, you want to hand over your old wallets too? Come on. Oh, God, I tell you, some of this stuff, it's going to be interesting this next week or so watching them all. Like I say, when the finger pointing starts, it's going to turn into a bloodbath in the Republican Party, and I'm like I say, I've got me a couple of bags of popcorn ready to pop, and a 2-liter to drink, and I'm going to sit down and watch it and laugh the whole time.
Well, and you know, try to be here the night of election night, because we're gonna have the whole fam damily in here, I think.
Well, good.
And
did you see the thing with Laura
Ingram?
Ingram, where she was talking about those conservatives who aren't real conservatives.
Yeah, they're having definitional problems now, aren't they? They can't decide who the real America is, who the real conservatives are.
It's like I say, this is just fun to sit back as a spectator sport.
It is. It is indeed.
We ain't got to do a thing. We just sit back.
But by the same token, Luke, I got to tell you, I am not at all convinced that it. I'm sorry, I'm just not. It ain't done.
Oh no! Don't get me wrong. Like I said, I'm planning a campaign for 3 more weeks. I plan to campaign a week after the election. I ain't giving up. You know what I mean? The day of the election, I intend on campaigning as much as I can. Tell my friends to go vote.
Well, look at the for instance, look at the inherent bigotry in a statement, for instance, like the ones that I saw a headline: law enforcement units beefing up security for election nights. And there was a line down there about how, well, you know, we can have bigger celebrations than we have for our sports teams. That's right. American politics, the body politic, our polity has been reduced. The determination of our political future, our well-being as a nation, is no different than the World Series.
Well, you know, it's like I said, they'll do like they did 4 years ago. You know, everybody needs to keep their eyes open because you're going to see the Republicans out trying to tell people that the election's the wrong day. No, no, it's the next day. Or they're going to tell them, no, that polling place is closed. So, you know, I mean, keep your eyes open on polls and stuff where they'll have posters up saying, oh, the election's
going tomorrow. I'm still waiting on an answer, Luke, for the question I posed before I dodged out of the studio a little bit ago. And that's the little thing that happened to me this morning. I decided, well, because usually I like to vote on Election Day. I'm a traditionalist like that.
Okay.
But I decided I'd go an early vote.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman at the door, I won't tell the way I did before, but she had a hissy because I had a Bluetooth thing in my ear. And these were her words, and I quote, "They can ruin the machine." Now,
they
just
better not be able to.
Let that sink in. These machines are so insecure, so unsafe, so utterly hackable that me, with no criminal intent whatsoever, simply wearing a Bluetooth earpiece into the room, can spoil votes. I could disenfranchise everybody who had voted that day, apparently.
You know, I'm completely with everybody else. I agree. We should go back to paper ballot.
Meanwhile, the headline in the Charleston paper today said, West Virginia Secretary of State says electronic voting machines good to go. Go, all right. Out the damn window.
Uh-huh. It's like I say, I'm just in the opinion. We go back to paper ballots. I'm sorry. You know, I want something we can recount. It's like they said, you know, I give you that little cash register tape. That don't mean squat. You say, look here, this is wrong. They go, so.
Well, that's why I'm taking, and I advise everybody else to, because, and now they may give you the fit over it, but I'm taking my little video cell phone in, and I am video, if I have to vote on some touchscreen nightmare,
mm-hmm.
I am videoing the entire process.
And at the end of ours, it comes up with a full screen telling you who all you voted for.
Right.
Take you a good picture of that, so, you know, if it comes up different on.
Well, that's what I said. I'm rolling video. I'm not taking individual screen caps. I'm rolling video on it.
Okay.
I mean, I'm going to see this. We'll see the screen transitions and everything.
But I agree with you. I mean, it's like saying, I don't really think we should go back just to good old-fashioned paper. Give me a ballot, and I'll put my X's.
Well, that was part of the newspaper story today. You know, Republican Secretary of State Betty Ireland said we prefer the electronic machines because it makes voting, counting the votes easier and quicker. Well, but if it doesn't work, then you're really not counting the votes now, are you, if it's not an accurate tally? And we have no, you know, these are ES&S machines. It's still proprietary code. We have no way of knowing whether they're accurate. And now I find out that something as innocuous as a Bluetooth earpiece, which even here in rural West Virginia, a lot of people have. And there wasn't a sign on the wall. There wasn't a sign on the door. Please turn off cell phone. Nothing.
Well, I'm curious, if that's the case, have you gone over and asked them, well, ma'am, do the police officers, they have turned off their radios?
And that's the funny thing. This voting is taking place not, 50 feet from a bunch of communications equipment.
Oh, God. It may be going backwards, and that's just fine with me. Like I say, get the paper and pencil out. If you can't figure out how to do it like that, you're in trouble anyway.
Great Britain and Canada and a number of other nations successfully count paper ballots year in and year out, and we don't hear about them having a lot of rigged elections. Now, you can stuff ballots, but the thing is, you got to work hard, and you've got to really, really violate physical security measures. Electronic security measures are much easier to obfuscate.
It's like I say, it's just counting up numbers. It don't mean anything. I mean, you could sit there with a calculator and punch in numbers. You say, that's just as realistic. You know what I mean? How do you know where those numbers came from? Like I've always said, you ever want that? We can always go back to the 60s, and I've got an episode of Mission Impossible you can watch, show you how to rig an election real easy.
Yep.
That was 50 years ago.
Indeed.
Mark, you know how it is. Greg Moore showed me how to do it.
Yeah, right before he took the rubber mask off.
Uh-huh.
I love those masks on Mission Impossible.
Oh, like I say, Martin Landau was the best thing. Reach up there and grab under his chin and just pull it off, and all of a sudden he's him again. He's no longer the guest star.
Yeah, a lot. You know, I got a feeling a lot of makeup artists made good money on that show.
Well, you know what I mean? It's sort of a classic thing. You know what I mean? It's one of those things we think about, you know, that us, that's part of Americana. You know what I mean? Always remember.
Yeah, but dummying up our votes isn't, so.
I know.
Yeah.
but you know what I mean.
Oh, I do.
But, no, I'll let you go on. I know you got other people to talk to, but like I say, we just need to keep on this. Like I say, the vote's next week, and I plan on campaigning for at least another week.
Yeah, and if it looks at all dodgy, yeah, raise all manner of hell.
Excuse me, 2 weeks. I'm sorry. I said week. Sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I say, we don't need to give up. Don't tell anybody to give up. I mean, I don't care what the numbers say. Keep going. Everybody show up that wants to vote and got to vote. All righty, Bob. I'm gonna let you go on. Have a good evening.
All right. You take care, Luke. Good hearing from you, brother. Bye now.
Bye.
And we will keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, hey, it's Sandra.
Hey, Sandra, what's happening?
Well, I was just looking at this stock market. Fun.
Yeah, you know, what is it? Basically, you buy on Friday and pray on Monday. I mean, is that how it works now? That's just part.
It dropped like over 500 points, right?
Yeah, so, oh, yeah.
You know, it's continuing to drop. It's in the 8,000s now, almost, you know, 8,500. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm just sort of like.
Is it unreasonable to think that we'll see 7,000?
I don't know, but this is like a nightmare for people who are, you know, our age and older trying to retire. You know what I'm saying?
I do indeed. And that's why I sort of militated against. When everything started hitting the fan, I acknowledged that my lizard brain was able to say, "Yeah, burn, baby, burn," but that's too simple. It's too simple an answer because if you sit back and think about it long enough, you know the guys at the top of the pyramid never hurt. Nobody ever shuts off the caviar and hummingbird tongue supply to them.
No, and the trillions of dollars that are being wiped off are really affecting institutional, you know, like a lot of retirement funds, municipalities.
Oh, I saw a headline today that students are having a much harder time getting private student loans now.
And unless you go to a state school in California where the tuition hasn't sort of, you know, got ridiculous, you know, you can't afford to go to these colleges because they're all 20, 30. Private colleges are up to $50,000. You know what I'm saying? No one can afford that.
No, it's ridiculous. And you got to wonder what's happening to these monstrous endowments of places like Harvard, Yale, the University of Michigan, all these billions of dollars that they're sitting on.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, all of that is just, the whole thing is just really quite disturbing. All it's doing is you know, making more have-nots, you know?
Well, indeed, and I mean, you know that these, I can't help but because I'm just a paranoid freak, Sandra. Isn't that the way some on the right want it?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, no. I mean, you know, this is sort of, I'm sick of people talking about incompetence. I see it as, you know, just sort of making any kind of socioeconomic type of changes in this country even more out of reach. You know what I mean?
And, see, that fits perfectly with my little theory that I've been enunciating for a year or so now, that we may be watching a whole lot of just theater with the presidential election, because the Republicans, I can't imagine that they actually want it, because there's nothing left to steal, Sandra.
No, I know, not only that, but I mean, what it does is sort of eliminate any kind of economic justice. You know, this is what we're looking at. We're looking at serfdom. I don't mean to get drastic, but really, if your asset is your home and it's upside down now, what the hell else do you got?
Yeah. Oh, I know.
I mean, you know, we're not talking about, we're talking about a country that, I don't know what it is, 100 million people earn $50,000 or less. You know, the majority of us work, and, you know, we don't earn all that much, really, at the end of the day. And most people, with any sense, say you need to raise wages. That is the only thing that's going to solve a lot of these problems. And the ideology is such that people can't even wrap their head around that and changing capital.
Well, who really, it's like what Peter Godbold once told me about the operating systems. Nobody actually knows everything that an operating, nobody knows all the code. And I don't think anybody can reasonably encapsulate everything that happens inside our economy. There are so many twists and so many turns and so many dodges and so many phony scams, you know, derivatives and swaps and all of that garbage. Is there anybody who actually has the answers?
Well, I can't even wrap my head around the idea that swap market is, like, unregulated and worth, like, $62 trillion. I mean, what in the world?
Yeah, just and apparently it was just something somebody made up one day.
Well, they only was able to make it up is because there were laws passed to require that it not be regulated, you know?
Yeah. The way I understand it, and I do not claim to have a great deal of economic understanding, but the way I do understand it is that this was created with the full knowledge that by some that this was going to happen.
Well, that's the thing. It's just, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm sorry. I mean, you know, in America, you're taught to think that people are basically okay. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And there's no reason for us to really be in that mode now after 8 years of this theft. I mean, you got to be kind of simple not to see that there's a problem in Houston and everywhere else, you know?
Yeah, and that something is rotten in the state of Denmark, without a doubt, Sandra.
And I heard,
because I was late getting back yesterday evening, I heard a little bit of Paul Krugman talking to Terry Gross on Fresh Air. And even with his expertise, he said, you know, we're not looking at the Great Depression, and you know, America is as sound as any credit-getting country can be. But even he didn't sound like he was totally convinced of what he was saying. Does that make, you know what I mean? How you can hear something in somebody's voice?
Well, yeah, and it's all really a bit uncharted because you know that horrible Friedman person? What is his name? Thomas Friedman?
Well, Milton, the old hateful one that they gave the Nobel to, who's roasting in hell now, or Thomas, who is
no,
the
father. The New York. The New York.
Yeah, yeah, the father of the Friedman unit.
This fool is writing as if, oh, don't worry, we'll all wake up one day and realize that we truly are globalized. I mean, he's looking at this as if it's some sort of utopia that's coming about. I mean, these people are...
Well, there may be an element of truth in what he says. We may look up and realize we're globalized, and that'll be the day that the United States wakes up and realizes that it now has the earning and wage-making power of someone in Bangladesh.
Well, exactly. No, I'm saying, you know, globalized at this point is a pejorative, because if you can look at what's going on, people cannot spend money they don't have, and their ATM machine, i.e. their house, has ended. So what are they going to buy this Christmas? What are they going to use?
I have a feeling the Christmas shopping season is going to be a bloodbath.
Well, I just wonder because, see, people who don't get wage increases like our country has been in for the last 20 years, they turn to this easy credit that was shoved down our throats, right? Well, now that's gone. Wages are stagnant still. What are you going to use to buy things? I'm just curious.
Yeah, you know, the credit card solicitations have dried up in my mailbox, Sandra.
Well, they say that's the next bubble. That's, you know, that one is coming down.
And if you look back on it, could that be the reason that... And that's the question. How much foreseeability was there in all of this? Could that be the reason that the bankruptcy rules were finagled a few years ago to turn unsecured debt into essentially secured debt?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say next, that we have that bit of legislation that has made it nearly impossible for you to get out from under. So debtor's prison, I mean, is that what's next? That industry is always ready to grow. You know what I'm saying?
Look at the prison industrial complex in this country. It's one of, even in hard times, it's still a growth investment.
Yeah, so that's, you know, but I'm just wondering because I think 70% of our economy now is consumer generated, or, you know, the consumer contributes that much to it. So I wonder, you know.
Well, I don't think
this conversation is hella boring to people because
no, it's not. You're getting some amens in the chat room and stuff. So I don't think it bores people to talk about this because it's not as dry and sterile as if we were talking about, you know, whether something was going to meet its Lipper average.
No, but it's just I'm just sort of I agree with you with the presidential thing. It seems like maybe there's a lot of smoke and mirrors going on because what is Obama going to do but get the chat in the back room saying, well, no, you need to get the deficit down. And you know what that means.
Well,
it means nothing.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, they've cleaned up. That's why I keep going. Every so often, a Democrat has to come along, regardless of what you think of that person's overall policies. For instance, regardless of the overall impression of Bill Clinton, and I know there's a lot of people in this audience that, you know, wouldn't pee on him if he was on fire. He came along and created that mythical budget surplus that allowed George Bush to come in and loot us.
Well, no, but Bill Clinton, you know, his mistake was this sort of obsession with monetary policy where, oh, my God, you can't have inflation or the world's coming to an end. It's just a load. Because if you look in the history where you had inflation and wages rising, it wasn't the end of the world. You still had 3% or 4% annual growth in the economy. So that whole it's such a wrong-headed policy.
And that's part of what Krugman was talking about last night, Sandra. What I did hear of it, he said that this is not the time for a freeze. This is the time for us not to worry about the deficit and to spend.
Because you can
spend us back into fiscal health and then do the belt tightening when we're making money again.
Right. No. He knows what the hell he's talking about. And at least his line of reason is shifting away from this, oh, my God, you know, we got to keep inflation under. And it's just a load. And, you know, I'm already hearing chit-chat about that. So.
And the fact that these guys are worried about inflation, but for 8 years they didn't worry about runaway debt?
No, that's what I'm saying.
Not being worried about becoming an alcoholic, but worrying about the end of the bottle.
No, exactly. And also, I just remember Greenspan's interview somewhere in the late 90s when he said his job, this is his words, was to keep workers insecure. This is like out of his mouth, right?
Well, and that's also straight out of the mouth of Milton Friedman, too.
Well, exactly. And Ayn Rand and all these other freaks who just want capital to strip everyone but them of any chance to, you know, do better. But he needs to go to jail. That guy needs to be locked up.
Well, he should be hounded out of civil society, in my opinion. But
I keep seeing him. He keeps popping up trying to explain himself. He's disgusting. God.
You know, you mentioned something a minute ago about they'll take Obama in the back room and explain things to him. And I think I've mentioned this in a conversation with you before. I don't know if you are a fan of the late, great Bill Hicks. But, you know, a lot of current comedians made their career bogarting his stuff during his life and after he died. But he said that he had a personal theory about the presidency. And that is that the day after the inauguration, the big boys take the new president into the back room and they show him the Kennedy assassination. And they wait for the president to look up and go, hey, fellas, I just realized something. This ain't the Zapruder film. This is a whole different angle. And then they look at him and go, you're right. It is. Here's how it's going to be. And it was part of a comedy routine, but there's a hell of a lot of truth in that.
No, I mean, just because, you know, that situation is, it's been a while, but when you think about it too closely, you know, it's mind-boggling that they took that fool out like that. You know what I'm saying?
And now you've got these people running around. And see, Sandra, it's gotten to the point. And it's so weird. You would think it would make it more difficult, but it's actually, it's empowered these bigots and these racists, and they're out there throwing the hateful epithets around as parts of ordinary conversation, and they're glad to be videotaped doing it now.
No, I know. Well, you know, I'm just hoping that scene will backfire, that, you know, you're sort of decent person can see that and say, oh, listen, you know, this is not what, you know, I want to be represented as, but, you know, I can only hope, because that's just over the top, you know?
Well, it is, but it's also disturbing. What was that story? One of these white supremacist Klan-type groups said that they are not watched as a domestic terrorist group. They're only listed as a group of interest.
Yeah, I heard that, too.
And also, huh?
That bear that they found dead.
Oh, dear God.
And on top of that,
and where was it? Yeah, North Carolina.
And the votes that are being flipped in your state. What's that about?
Well, we've got a Republican Secretary of State. So did Ohio in 2004, and so did Florida in 2000.
Well, the one in Colorado seems like they're going buck wild, too, with trying to, you know, keep that state from going completely blue.
It's going on all over the place, and, you know, I know I've had a couple Boss Man Wayne mentioned to me that Bobby Kennedy Jr. was on Rachel Maddow last night, and it was mentioned in the chat room as well, advising people to vote early.
Oh, he was on Mike Malloy for a minute, I think, last night.
So I took it, you know, I took the advice, and I and you probably heard when you were waiting on hold, I walk in there, and the woman has a conniption because apparently a Bluetooth headset can, her words, not mine, Sandra, ruin the machine. Now, what the heck is that?
What are you, on an airplane? What the hell?
You know, right.
Come
I mean, it, you know, you can't bring that in here. It'll hear the big board. It'll hear everything. I mean,
well,
you know, and that, you know, that's where the little paranoids start running around in my brain and go, wait a minute. Are they afraid that this thing's going to pick up some sort of data transmission and I'm going to hear the dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee? You know what I mean?
What, as they're changing votes?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is just a teeny tiny transmitter and a teeny tiny receiver, and she's telling me that standing in that room with that can ruin the machine. Then if I can innocently ruin the machine, what can somebody who's up to no good do?
My thing is, what is that Help America Vote Act was some sort of joke on us, because we just need paper ballots, and if it takes a day or two, so be it. This situation.
It ain't going to take a day or two. We're talking about precincts. You know, you can't, you count at the well, I mean, the way it works here in West Virginia, at least, the polling places, the furthest out are the last ones usually to get there. But they come in after the polls close, the minute the polls are closed and the ballots come in, you start counting them. And you have a running number, and by the, you know, what? You're done by, you've got a pretty good statistical idea of what the outcome's going to be by 11, 12 Eastern time, tops. Maybe you're 3 o'clock finishing, and this is some sort of undue burden on the society?
No, it's a joke. You know, the election was stolen in 2000, and they've made it so that we're stuck with this electronic voting. I mean, and it's a joke. They use the database that's required now by each state to cage people. And it's incredible. It's just incredible what has happened, you know, in the name of this Help America Vote business.
Well, they found out that they successfully stole the 2000 election. Then the ES&Ss and the Sequoias back then and the Diebolts and the came in and said, well, you know, we've got a surefire means of. And I'm sure that the Karl Roves out there were going, we really can mess with these things, can't we? Oh, yeah, boss. And that's how the Help America Vote Act turns into Help America's Democracy Die.
Well, I mean, you know, because it looks like, you know, Obama can win. But I have to say, I'm still not, you know, I really am not comfortable with that outcome because of all this other stuff that unfortunately I've heard about, you know.
I'm a political realist, you know that. I'm a big boy, and I'm not sitting here saying that he's going to be all frisbees and wheat checks and we're going to walk down the yellow brick road whistling together.
Well,
cuz no.
Oh no, I'm not even talking. I mean, I'm just wondering if the man will be able to get in the White House though. Because I'm sure we have a narrative for if Palin and McCain wins, I bet.
Sure.
I don't know what it's going to be. Oh, the racists over, you know, came in or some madness that they'll come.
Well, look, they're already priming the pump in the media saying that, and the right wing is part and parcel, and the little for-profit media goes on, well, you know, there'll probably be race riots if Obama loses.
Oh, they're saying that now?
Oh, yeah, hell yeah.
Well, I've been hearing that the various Beltway people are telling Democrats they have to move to the center again. You know that song and dance?
Oh, you mean the center that's over slightly to the right of Mussolini?
Well, no, they never say anything to the Republicans when they win. But when Democrats are about to win or if they win, all
well, you know, yeah, you've got to govern from the center.
Yeah, it's such a low, but I don't know. Anyway, I'll let you go. I got to go. I'm getting a headache just thinking about
it. I'm sorry. I don't mean to give you a headache, Sandra. Imagine what my poor little pumpkin head feels like all the time.
Oh, no. Listen, no, you got to keep it going because I need some sanity in my life. So.
Well, you take it easy. We will talk soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye now. And just a reminder, look, this is the place to be election night. I mean, are you really going to sit there on Tom Brokaw, who sounds like he's slightly out of breath? You going to listen to that? Are you going to CNN? Fox? Cutesy Couric? Charlie Brown Knows Gibson? Be here. This is the place all night long. We ain't going nowhere. And you can do it. It'll be real citizen journalism. You can call in from your individual counties, precincts, state, what have you. And you can let us know what you saw. You know, Guy James will be on the air that day. Mark Levine will be live on the air that day. I'll be live on the air that day. And if you see dirty stuff happening, you report it here. And we'll turn around and find out what the right thing to do is. We'll have all the numbers. Be here. You know, this is not an exercise in ego, the horn. We really hope we're serving some sort of legitimate civic function. That's why we call it the restoration of the American debate, dialogue, and discussion. And I can't imagine when that discussion could possibly be more important than election night. Because these bastards are going to do what they can do. I'm not convinced that they really want it. But if they do, they're going to fight to the last man and hope that if it gets close, that the racist vote will tip it, and B, that the machines will help, and C, that Obama, if things look bad, that he'll run away from the fight like John Kerry did with $45 million in his war chest. Does that sound crazy to you? Sadly, to me, it seems eminently sober. So be here. Screw those other people. Be here. We've got it. And let's do keep the phones going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. What's going on, man?
Hey, what's up, Reverbo?
You know, following Sandra is like following the Beatles. This is not a good place to be right now.
You're bad.
Oh, my. Why did you have to do this? Why did you have to talk about the cell phones and the voting machine?
Well, Reverbo, because I'm clueless. I can't get any answers here. I'm not going to call the repig-licking Secretary of State and ask. You know, she already put, like I said, it was the headline in today's Charleston paper. Electronic voting machines, good to go, with everything but a picture of Betty Ireland standing there with a stupid grin on her face and her thumb sticking in the air.
I voted last Friday. You know where I'm here. I'm down in North Carolina. You know that.
I know. But look.
I voted last Friday, and there were a couple of perky election judges outside, and it was a great day, and everybody was out there having a good time, and I guarantee you 60-70% of them were voting for Obama. And they came over and just reminded us in a real perky way to make sure you turned your cell phones off, and no one paid any attention to it at all. And now you.
Oh, they told you?
Yeah, they reminded people to turn them off who were waiting in line. And now you have to go stir things up and get everybody all worried about this because
I'm a bad person.
I started to think this kind of stuff just goes over everybody's head in 2008. Hey, turn your electronic devices off before the plane takes off. Hey, no problem. You know, kids, take a magnet out of your pocket before we go visit Uncle Dave in intensive care. Hey, okay. You know, and by the way, everybody turn your cell phone off before we go in to vote. Why?
Yeah, because it's going to make the plane crash. It's going to make the plane crash. Uncle Dave's pacemaker will stop, and you're going to vote for Obama, sucker.
Yeah, but I don't turn my cell phone off when I'm near my high-tech expensive computer equipment like I am right now.
Exactly. Anyway. Now, I've got mine turned off right now.
Okay.
Among other things, because it's a battery pig. Who knew? But if I leave it on every now and then, that thing will happen where you hear the click, tick, 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 tick. And how that's getting into a hardwired system, I don't know. But it does.
Well, yeah, that's just the satellites are beaming down on you, and there goes your security clearance. Obviously, you're toast. But
that can ruin a voting machine.
Can't they set off those roadside bombs in Iraq with cell phones?
They kind of do, don't they?
Why? Is there something I'm not getting about this? I agree with you. I'm not even trying to screw up the vote. How easy would it be for somebody to screw it up?
And I'm really, I don't know, he gets so much email, maybe he didn't see it. I'm anxious to hear back from Brad Friedman about this. Because I trust Brad to be, so he's sort of the clearinghouse of all things hateful electronic voting, as far as I'm concerned. Brad Friedman at bradblog.com.
It's funny. We're just all like accepting this as just, it's just another thing to do, you know. And then thanks to you, I'm thinking, so what do you mean screw up the vote? You mean... I mean, I don't know. Maybe you ought to be explaining this to everybody. Not you. I just mean.
There's nothing to explain. I mean, that's what's been coming out of the West Virginia Secretary of State's office for days now. Nothing to see here. These are not the droids you're looking for. Please continue voting, citizen.
Yeah, nothing happening here. Everybody can go on home.
And then, you know, Brad, right before I go on the air, Reverbo, Brad comes out with a new article, Vote Flipping in Tennessee. And, you know, my weird, paranoid little mind is sitting here thinking, wait a minute, if West Virginia had done the right thing in 2000, Florida wouldn't have mattered, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Our five electoral votes would have put Al Gore over the top, and it wouldn't have mattered if George had gotten all of Florida's. It wouldn't have mattered. Now, here we are. It's 2008. We've been, West Virginia's been tangentially mentioned as, you know, maybe we're going Obama. We've got new polling numbers out today. I said, nah, it ain't. But we are a state with a Republican Secretary of State.
Yeah, that's scary.
And you have to have one of those to dummy up the numbers. Look at how they're torturing the Democratic Secretary of State in Ohio with all the damn lawsuits.
Yeah, they're going after him.
Who managed, you know, they're vote flipping in Tennessee? Who manages the Tennessee vote, Republican or Democrat? I don't know.
Well, I know who manages it here in North Carolina, and that's why we're sort of breathing easy. But you have to be on the alert for this.
Well, North Carolina put in if I
me out.
Well, it should. It freaked me out. I mean, it's like being, you know, accused of, it's magnets in the intensive care ward. Put your mask on. You'll make the machine sick.
Yeah. Oh, God. If we get through this, it's just going to be a miracle. And here's why we're going to get through it, though. And, you know, I volunteer for Obama down here, and we got this going on 24/7. The energy levels is ramping up so high now, it really is fun. There's only word for it. I've never volunteered for a presidential campaign before in my life, and this is, I have the time to do it, and it's just great. But we're in there, so we're just doing this all day long, and, you know, think about this for a minute. Imagine if the ticket was reversed. And the Democrats put up, you can't even fathom this, the Democrats put up Grandpa and the Church Lady. I mean, we would be mortified. I mean, we would just be so sad. And that's why I think
it feels like it feels kind of like it would feel kind of like nominating Dukakis, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, we could go there. I mean, you would just think, you just wouldn't be, you couldn't believe it. Now, it's true that the Democrats are not the goose-stepping army of the right wing, who would obviously vote for...
No, we're a herd of cats on a wide-open parking lot.
The next were Republican. They'd vote for Heinrich Himmler, probably. But it would just be dreadful if that was our ticket. The people just wouldn't vote. They'd vote for Nader. They'd do something. I mean, people would just... And so, that just gives me some fairly good feelings about this. I mean, a more retarded ticket, I can't remember.
I love the sign that I saw earlier today, Reverbo. It's from, I think, lobbyistsformccain.com. And it's a big, it's, you know, using the motif of the, you know, the blue background with the bars and the little gold star in the middle. And it says, get off my lawn! McCain Palin, lobbyist for McCain.com. Or, yeah. And it's, that's so perfect. It's because it is a dead ticket. And there are some similarities. See, I think back to the other time. Is there anybody out there that thinks the Repiglicans really wanted to defeat Bill Clinton in his second term? In the 1996 election, I don't think they did, because, you know, I know that Newt Gingrich and that crowd said, oh, we're going to get him, we're going to impeach him, we're going to run him out of office. He won't be able to show his head in America anymore, because they were going to teach him a lesson, and they wanted him elected. So consequently, the Repiglican Party nominated, you remember, bottom to Walmart, Bob Dole.
Yeah, battling Bob Dole, who was, yeah, basically.
Another prison. Guy who couldn't raise his hand.
No. He was lost before he even started.
And who did Bob Dole nominate for his vice president?
Oh, God, let me think about this.
You want help?
God, what? Yes, I need help.
Jack Kemp.
See, this is how bad it is. I couldn't even remember that.
Oh, I had to struggle a little bit when this was all sort of the fulminating in my brain earlier today.
Did Jack Kemp used to throw footballs?
Jack Kemp threw footballs for the Buffalo Bills and handed it to O.J. Simpson a whole lot.
Damn.
But well, he was one of the. But he was a hardcore right wing neocon.
Yeah, he was.
And he energized the base. And they were all excited. Well, you know, if it doesn't work out for Bob Dole, maybe we can run Jack Kemp next time through. That's what, I mean, I remember it being said in 1996. Jack Kemp and Sarah Palin are the same animal.
Yeah, maybe.
Weird extremist fringe elements to keep the mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging base in line while a glass-jawed nominee takes the plunge. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. It makes sense, except there's a whole other school of thought that's even above that, and it's the people who are looking at the possible Obama presidency as, what's the word they're throwing out, a transformational one, right?
Yeah.
Like this is a sixth generation thing that might happen.
It's being painted as an FDR election.
Yeah, possibly. And
I mean, on our side.
Yeah, well, think about it. I was thinking it's quite the transformation then for the GOP, who, you know, okay, let's follow this line of thinking. So here these people just opted for the quick and dirty buck, right? And they just basically bankrupted their whole party. I'm hoping for the rest of my lifetime.
Well, you're down in that neck of the woods where Wachovia matters. They sank like a rock today. But
think about this.
But before they sank, they gave $8 million to the Republican National Committee.
That's
the GOP. That's the Repiglican way. You steal every last crumb out of the cupboard, and then you let the people who have the brains to come in and refill it do so. It's grasshopper and ant stuff, like what Robert and I were talking about a couple of nights ago. Because, you know, the grasshopper waited for the ants to do, you know, to do the prudent stuff and then came in and wiped them out. And so I think one of the reasons that I've argued all along that the Repiglicans don't want this is that they have torched they didn't just empty the cupboards. They pulled the cupboards down.
No, they slashed and burned on their way out. But they also, George Bush and his pals, pretty much. I mean, if it is transformational, it's got to be transformational both ways, doesn't it? These people...
All equations must balance.
These people are dead in the water, I'm hoping, for the next 40 years. So I guess that's okay with them. We'll make our quick buck, and we'll be back.
Well, this is their Social Security reverbo. If they're dead for 40 years... We will have a very strong, healthy economy by the time they come back, and they can steal it all over again.
There you go. Now you had to say that, didn't you? You had to go there.
Because we never run them to ground. That's why I keep beating on this. We never run them to ground. We stop and we throw a party. We don't run them to ground.
This time it's total annihilation. It has to. Otherwise, you're right. They will be back just like a bad, what's the word, a bad...
They'll be back like a biblical plague of locusts.
Like a plague of locusts.
If we don't, I mean, you know, you got Joe the plumber out there, Social Security. I've always hated it. And I had a conversation with our buddy Paul yesterday off air and kind of off the record, so maybe I'm telling tales on it. But he said, that sucker says I hate Social Security. He said, I've been paying into it since I was 14 years old and it's mine. And, you know, it was so eloquent. And I hadn't thought of it in those terms. It's not, they try to paint this as one generation paying for the next, or for the previous. BS! It's been paid into! It's not like, when these Republicans talk about I feel like we should let young people put their money in the stock market and watch it go down the toilet. They're not talking about screwing the young people, they're talking about screwing the previous generation. Because a lot of them didn't go along for most of their lives with Republican policies, Reverbo. You know, I got my Social Security statement of benefits today.
I've seen that too, yeah.
Now, here I am, 45 years old.
By the way, they presume you're going to keep making the money you're making, if not more. If you notice, that's how that table works.
Right. But, here I am, 45 years old, making nothing. But if I work till I'm 62, they're going to give me $400 and some odd a month. If I work till I'm 70, they'll let me have $949.
Yeah, and if they change it and make you work till you're like 86, you'll probably get $1,600 a month.
Right, but what's $949 going to be in? Let's see, 8 and 13, 23 in 2033.
A hot dog with extra mustard?
Once a month.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's the stakes have never been more clearly drawn as far as I'm concerned. But I don't have this unbridled confidence of and I won't give voice to it, I won't give truck to it. That everything's already in place and it's just going to nobody will celebrate more proudly or loudly if it's a, an L word. Starts with and ends with slide. I'll be tickled pink. I will be a giggling fool. I'll have a straw in a bottle of champagne on the air that night if that's what it turns out to be.
Boy, I will definitely be tuning in.
But
matter of fact, there's no. I'm tuning. Your show is going to be on all night long. This is going to be the.
Well, that's what's going to happen. You know, Guy will do his show, Mark will do his, I'll do mine, and somewhere toward the end of mine, because that's when polls will start closing. We'll start bringing in Guy and Mark and John and anybody who wants to participate. Citizen reportage, real independent journalism, non-for-profit based.
And who
knows what might happen.
How late are you going to broadcast that night?
We'll broadcast. Election night 2000.
You know, it's all going to be the East Coast is where it's all going to be happening.
Yeah, election night 2006. We were that, and that was the off-year congressional elections. We did something similar, and I think we were on the air till 2 a.m.
Great.
Yeah, and we were all kind of whew, when it was over. But we were here, and we had people calling in from all over, reporting on their races and reporting on who. And, there are things I do want to hear. Minnesota's in the central time zone. I want to hear that Michelle Bachmann is an unemployed person before the night is over.
I want to hear Al Franken's victory speech.
Yeah. Yeah, I want, exactly. I want to, I want to have some sense that, because, I know you're probably like me. I don't go in for excuses. And screw filibuster-proof majority in the Senate. I want an excuse-proof majority in the whole Congress. I want an excuse-proof Congress. I want an excuse-proof president. And I want to go on and start working on an excuse-proof Supreme Court. I'm sick of excuses. Well, we would have impeached George Bush, but we knew it would never get out of the Senate. Well, you know, we wanted to end the war in Iraq, but we were afraid that George Bush would just let him lay there and die in the sand, so we had to give him more money.
Yeah, I don't remember this sort of governing. I don't. This is all like, I want people getting in there, in the ring, and standing up, swinging until they're knocked down senseless.
You know, I mentioned it the other night, and I went and looked up that famous photograph of Muhammad Ali with his fists are just down around his waist, and he's standing over the prone body of Sonny Liston. And that is the visual equivalent of what I want on election night.
I love it.
I want to be, but see, that's how I'm mean, and I've been told, Bob, you're just too mean. You don't understand. People have, we have differences of opinions, and we can't all think the same thing. No, I understand that. But you know what? The Republican Party and Tom DeLay, you remember all his blather? Hell, I think he started a PAC or some sort of money laundering operation called the Permanent Republican Majority. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And they were setting out to kill us.
They damn near did.
And now, I'm just enough of a mean SOB, self-made, to say that I want to do unto them as they have done unto us. And I would dare anybody to call it anything but justice.
Speaking of that, what you just said, if I could go back real quick to the whole Bishop Bob shtick.
No, go anywhere you want to go.
You know you do that. Frightening. You're frighteningly skilled at that. You know that, don't you?
Oh, glory, I know.
I know too, but just for the
I got 16 years of tortured adolescence and childhood listening to that kind of stuff, brothers and sisters.
Now it's important though to note for your new listeners tonight that you have somewhat forsaken the terrifying God who smites everyone.
Yes,
for the more gentle possum God.
I am a devotee of the possum goddess.
Yes, join the club. That's where you should be. God being a woman is if God was still a woman, things would be a lot different, a lot better.
I tend to agree.
No, sir. All right. Well, I guess I will let you go, and good talking to you again.
Reverbo, it is always a joy. And you know what? I did get that email from you the other night saying, why don't you guys all switch to Macs and Apples and stuff?
I was just getting it.
I know. But I felt the needles go in. And one of these days, I promise you, one of these days when we got $20,000 laying around we're not doing anything with, this whole studio is going to be Apple.
Let me leave you with a really brief quote from somebody that I think that if people had any sort of historical perspective at all, they would realize that, things don't really have to be this way and we're not going to be manipulated or exploited anymore. It was one of these quotes by one of these guys. From a couple hundred years ago, and it goes something like this. It does me no injury for my neighbor to say there are 20 gods or no god.
It neither breaks my leg nor picks my pocket.
You know it too.
Yes, because I love Mr. Jefferson.
I wish more people remembered who he was.
I do too. I hear every now and then from I can't remember his name off the top of my head, and I apologize. A gentleman I had on the show, more than a year ago, what he did is he took all the words of Thomas Jefferson, and instead of trying to put them in chronological order, he made like a book of topic-based sayings out of them, and it's like. It's like having a sanity Bible, and you can just. Oh yeah, it's out there. What's his name? Seems like it's Peter something.
Sounds wonderful.
The something Jefferson. It's around. I gotta find it, but it's not a real thick book. But you can just tune on religion, on politics, on patriotism, on cornbread, and he said something because he had an opinion about everything. And it all makes sense.
There's a guy that needs to read that book, and I think his name is Joe Sixpack.
Yeah, that's like that thing. That's like that thing Guy did the other day where he played that excerpt of that speech that FDR gave to the American people where FDR was saying, get your copy of the Constitution. And I never realized that FDR sounded a lot like Katharine Hepburn. but he did.
Yes.
And read that Constitution and learn that Constitution. And you know he meant it.
We used to be impressed in this country with scholarship. We used to be impressed in this country with, I don't know, high standards and qualifications.
No, I know. I want to make a T-shirt, just white T-shirt, black letters, or black T-shirt, white letters, elitist, paren, sorry if you're not.
We used to be impressed with the president.
But now we can just have a beer with him.
Well,
and he's screwing up the economy just like if it was us putting quarters into one of them quarter-pushing machines at the gas station.
I'm sorry, I'm not impressed with Joe Sixpack. Joe Sixpack should be saving his money sending his kids to college so they're 500 times smarter than stupid Joe the Sixpack.
Joe Sixpack's loaded,
Joe
dude.
Sixpack.
Joe Sixpack's loaded. That's why he's Joe Sixpack.
I don't want him anywhere near the White House, and I don't want Jesus anywhere near the White House.
Not the one that they think exists. I'd trust the real Jesus near the White House.
Well, he wouldn't be anywhere near it.
He'd go in with a homemade cat of nine tails and start beating the piss out of people, and oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Well, he would, and we'd
kill him for it.
Probably.
There's a reason he ain't coming back. Hey, Dad, been there once. You can't make me go twice. Them people are crazy.
Oh man, yeah, he doesn't want to come back to this. This is a mess.
Walk around, see a bunch of crosses all over creation. It's worse than when I was here the last time, Dad.
Well, he'd blow their minds anyway because he's not going to come back. He'd have to buy a blonde wig and he'd have to have the blue eyes and, you know.
Well, but we can do those. We can do that with contact lenses, so. Yeah. But, no, I get it. Reverbo, good talking to you, brother. Always good.
All right. Until that time, my friend.
Remember the possum goddess and do your proper obeisance.
I shall, and I know it. You always have to say it, though. Keep it personal.
Keep it personal. Absolutely. Take care, brother.
Okay, my friend. Bye.
Bye. I didn't mean to upset Reverbo with all the talk about the cell phone thing, but, you know, I refuse to be like, you know, some right-wing blatherhead and pretend I'm an expert on crap that I'm not. And I don't know why this lady was having such a poop hemorrhage over the little thing. But, again, I just have to put the question. If I can unintentionally trash an election system simply by wearing a Bluetooth headset into a room, what can someone with real ill intent do to the process? And I think the answer is no good. So we've got, 23 minutes or so left in the program. A good 15 to 18 minutes worth of conversation if you want to ring in and finish it out. But I realize there are people in this audience that I know for a fact that I put off by focusing on this political stuff. I have been told directly that we need to talk about the fact that the planet is dying. And God, I try to. I try to. And what, you know, a population explosion means. And what massive disease would do to the planet. And I try to find time for all these things in their time. Right now, though, it's awfully hard not to pay attention to this campaign. Because on this campaign hinges just about all of that. Whether you believe me or not, it does. I've reached a point in my political maturity that I don't think that the President of the United States... Now, the President of the United States can solve all problems almost instantaneously. It's just not the solution that you and I want. Because it's a nuclear holocaust. For a long time now, the President of the United States has had the power to end life on Earth. And whether you like it or not, that ends your problems too. But I don't want to think about that horror, and that's what scares the daylights out of me about a freak like John McCain, or an uber freak like Sarah Palin, you know, who it turns out is little more than a con artist at heart. And some of this dawned on me when I was talking with Agnes a little bit about Mussolini's beauty pageant past. And she said, well, you know, Bob, when those girls go to get into those swimsuits and evening gowns, they do all kinds of stuff underneath to make stuff look different from how it really is. Medical adhesive tape to make your butt look butter. Or your boobs look boobier. And nothing is as it seems. And I got to thinking about it. That really is what we're dealing with here. Oh, she seems like a fundamentalist, and that weird little freak in that audio clip I played for you earlier saying, she is full of the Holy Spirit. Well, she's full of something, but it ain't holy, and it ain't spiritual. So, that kind of fraud has a direct and proximate impact on whatever she would touch. And now we find out that she wants to be the super vice president. She wants to go in there and affect some good policy changes for Brandon and his family, you betcha, don't you know? No, I'll take a pass, Sarah. Twit. I said twit. And we find out that she was defrauding the Alaska government by dragging her children around with her to meetings that children had no business at. He said, ending his sentence with a preposition. And that she billed the state of Alaska for travel time for political activities for her kids, including, you know, my second grader, Piper, the one that's named after one of the witches on one of those witch TV programs we get up here in the frozen north. We watch TV when we're not making Pipers, which is mostly what we do during the winter because it gets awfully dark and awfully cold. She's a fake. She's a phony. She's a fraud. And it's so sad that the Repig-Lickin' National Committee thought so little of her that they didn't even trust her to pick out her own clothing. Their bigotry and their elitism with regard to people from a frontier state like Alaska, as you know, which has some commonalities with a state like West Virginia. People who, the ones who have been there for generations, whose families have survived largely by wit and by sheer determination. Same thing here in the hills. They thought so little of her that they took her and had to dress her up to the tune of $150,000. $150,000. Are there any food banks in Fairbanks? Juneau? Anchorage, Nome. Are there any homeless shelters? Being out in the night, even at this time of year in Alaska, can be a death sentence. And I suppose for some every year is. But the Repig-Lickin' National Committee found themselves an attractive, middle-aged woman, barely old enough to qualify to be the President of the United States. And I don't know if they were afraid she was going to show up in a muckluck or try to ride her dog sled down Pennsylvania Avenue. But they had to take her to Needless Markup in Saks Fifth Avenue and buy her $150,000 worth of clothing because she couldn't be trusted to dress herself. And then the catty women who sold her the clothing sold her really ugly stuff, like that shiny black thing she wore to the debate that looked like something that had been wallered around in on a Trailways bus so long that the cotton was shining. Or that leather dominatrix outfit that she showed up in to answer questions about what the vice president really does. like I said, looked like the road outfit that Mike Reno wore in that first big American tour for Loverboy. God, I'm dating myself. I saw them. They opened for ZZ Top, if you can imagine that. Everybody's waiting for the weekend. And then ZZ Top, that little old band from Texas. It was, shall we say, incongruous, what of it I remember. But that's how little they thought of her. She is, you know, we joke about Caribou Barbie and stuff. But to them, she really is a thing. You know, liberal feminists, because most feminists are, will talk frequently about the objectification of women. And this cynical nomination of an utterly unprepared, painfully ignorant, undereducated woman to be the Vice President of the United States solely because she has a vagina and has the ability to motivate the right-wing, religiously insane base while the Republican Party mails in the election. My God, it's the very height of cynicism, isn't it? You know what they think of her. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. And a dippy middle-aged woman is Republicans, right? You know. This is the horn. My favorite part of this, the part where she goes, ah! I gotta stop the song before those just drive me completely out of my mind. I can still see that video in my head. That came out toward the end of my college career, and it went over and over and over in an endless loop, both on MTV and in my mind, because they had that whole setup with the Marilyn Monroe and the down the stairs and the diamonds are a girl's best friend motif, and you know that's probably the time that Madonna was her absolute hottest. Oh, God, she may be a material girl, but damn, I think I've just proved myself a really shallow guy. But 150,000, you know, and chat room moderator ELO, Sue, to those of us who know and love her, sent that along, and I'm so grateful. Because while it may seem like a fluff story, it's not. Yeah, this woman was brought to you, as Sue noted, by the people who complained about John Edwards' haircut. Yeah, really? One would think in a rational universe something like that, I don't know, some sort of natural law of hypocrisy would just cause Sarah Palin not to happen. But it did happen, and the $150,000 shopping spree happened because the Republican Party relies on a compliant lapdog for-profit media to not make anything out of it. And they rely on the ignorance of Joe Sixpack. Joe Sixpack, damn it! I'm tired of Joe Sixpack! Joe the Plumber, Joe Sixpack, Joe Asscrack. Joe Sixpack's, like I said to Reverbo, he's drunker than Adam's off ox. That's why he's Joe Sixpack. Joe Suitcase. Well, I got me a 24-pack because I don't know if I can make it on just six. But they require, all of this is predicated on the ignorance of the American people. And you know me, science fiction freak fan that I am. I'm just scared to death that one of these days somebody out there listening to this program, sitting in their basement, is going to invent the transporter device and just and send me right smack dab back in time into the studio of Flush Flimball at the same moment that he's hollering about the Brett girl's $400 haircut, and I'm just going to have to get all Robert De Niro in the Untouchables on, you like baseball, I like baseball, whack, right in the back of his head with a ball bat like it's a soft melon. Be the best thing ever happened to America, I can tell you that, in a long time. Yeah, that's right, Cobwebs, Joe Sixpack, Joe Blow Me. But it really does get under my skin. And here, while we're at trivialities, in brief conversation on Monday, that article about John McCain's family tree came up. About how it turns out that even though he denied it early on, he was confronted in February 2000... with a Salon article that proved that, you know, John McCain's not from Arizona. Don't stop that. John McCain, Arizona. John McCain is a transient, a military transient, whose home and roots still remain in Carroll County, Mississippi. He is the greater great-great-grandson of John Alexander McCain, who was killed in 1863 defending his plantation from them Yankees who wanted to free the, you know, that one, those ones. And what a con. He's from Arizona. He's from Arizona because that's where the beer heiress lived. If the beer heiress had lived at the North Pole, he'd be John McCain R. North Pole. He's John McCain, our opportunist. John McCain's an honorable man. You know, other people can keep doing that. No. No more. Honorable man, my Aunt Matilda's left hind foot. Yeah, old great uncle granddaddy, because you know how it was down on the plantation, right? Killed in 1863, defending the plantation. He was a cavalry officer. For all we know, rode with Nathan Bedford Forrest, the father of the KKK. We just don't know. Purely speculation. But I did go over, because I love this kind of trivia, just so you'll know, I went over the rosters. I went and found them. I went over the rosters of all the Carroll County, Mississippi cavalry units. And when I say all, I mean all. I mean, I didn't find any more I exhausted what was available online. And I mean, it was hundreds of names, name after name after name after name. The Carroll Rangers and the Carroll Home Guardsmen and the Carroll Riding Reapers. And you know, they named their units like football teams back then. Guess what? He wasn't in there. There was another McCain, but it wasn't him. Started out as a private, ended as a private. He got out. This guy was either a free agent, what were called in other circles raiders, sort of like Morgan's Raiders, what was that, Kentucky? And then that other outfit of raiders in Missouri that Jesse James, I guess, allegedly rode with. He was either a raider or he rode with another unit outside. Or he was just a coward who was shot on his porch. We don't know. But that stuff matters. Teoc, Mississippi, by the way, home of Mississippi John Hurt, one of the great bluesmen, and could and possibly a distant relative of John McCain, who still doesn't exactly like, well, he won't go to the family reunion down there in Teoc. They named the plantation Waverly, but it didn't stay Waverly. It went back to Teoc, which is an old Choctaw word meaning tall pines. And before that, in the background of John Sidney McCain III, before that, there were some Youngs in his background. Famous Indian fighters in the Carolinas. Yep. Story goes that one of the two Young brothers was ambushed and scalped by some Indians, heathens, red savages. And the other Young was so damn mean and hateful and murderous and bloodthirsty that he went and tracked down the Indians, killed them, and rescued his brother's bloody scalp and took it and buried it with the rest of his brother. And went on to become an assistant on the general staff of one George Washington during the Revolution. I love genealogy, and this stuff matters. So, sorry it was a little harem scarum this evening, this prayer meeting edition, but I sure enjoyed it. I hope you did, too. Thank you to all of you who continue to contribute your financial support to the Horn. Thank you to those of you who contribute your support in other ways as well, emailing, blogging, calling the program, enjoying yourself in the chat room there, talking about the Horn on other blogs, letting people know there is another way to do radio from a liberal perspective. Thank you to all of you. Thanks to our IT consultant, Peter Godbold. The computers around here do what they're supposed to do because Peter Godbold tells them to, and they obey. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer in Sydney, Australia. Remember, his show comes up Sunday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, all foxed up, right here on the Horn, right after Rama's Help Me, I'm an American, which is a brilliant show, by the way. So that's, thanks to Ben Birch. How could I forget Ben? WhiteRoseSociety.org. Everything that happens on the streams and the archives happens because of the dedication and persistence and dogged determination of Ben Birch, who single-handedly saved liberal talk on the Internet by creating the White Rose Society, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, of course, ongoing, endless thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Zach Smith coming up on Sunday's show on John Fox, on All Foxed Up. Need to mention that. That'll be a hoot. And please remember, Friday is anniversary night, so if you want to do anything special, you got something you want to say, make sure you call in that evening. Because you're welcome to. There won't be any congratulatory audio or anything like that I know of. Just another night at work. But if you want to mark it in any way, you are more than welcome to do so. So that's tonight's program. Thank you, everyone. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.